CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals. Whether you own or run a business or would like to start one, this is the place for all the answers. Now, here's your host, Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind. Welcome to my show. In order to get to me, it's really easy. Just Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you can take a look at my blog postings going back several years. You can see some of the businesses that we're in. And in better times, you can even check out some job openings that we might have in the United States. And once in a while, even outside. If you're interested in my political rantings, and they are rantings, just go to NationalFreedomForum.com, same process. Look for the box that says subscribe, type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and if you do that, you'll get my daily blog postings on the politics of our nation. If you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources and the blog I write there, just go to ParagonHomeResources.com, look for the click that says blog, same process. Type in your email information, follow the confirmation instructions, and you'll get my home-related blog postings every day. We're going to talk about home buyers this morning in our first segment. And if you want to listen to some of our past shows and podcasts, just go to TalkZone.com, and you can see all of my shows hanging there. If you've missed one in past weeks, you can catch up on some of the information that I might provide. We always start the show with the first segment, is Seeing the Train Coming segment. And I got to tell you, folks, I've been in business for more than 40 years, and I've been basically in the real estate business the whole time, one way or another, doing relocation and helping families move all over the United States and all over the world. And I'll tell you, I have not seen a real estate market like the one we have today. It's crazy, crazy, crazy out there. People, there are bidding wars going on. Houses are selling way above list price in many markets. I was just talking to someone that I know up in Seattle, and their daughter put their home on the market. This is unbelievable. They had 19 bids, and they ended up selling the house for more than $230,000 above list price. That is astounding. I don't think I've ever heard one quite that bad or good, as the case may be, if you're the seller. But now what's happening in many of these markets, like Phoenix, like Dallas, like Florida, where a lot of people are moving to Arizona, they're moving to Nevada, they're moving to Texas, they're moving to Florida. And many of these people are coming with California money. They're getting out of California. California, they just did the census. They're actually losing a House seat because the population has gone down by more than 700,000. It takes about 700,000 people for each House of Representatives seat in the Congress. And California, the blue states are losing seats. The red states, for the most part, are gaining seats. So Texas is going to gain a couple of House seats. Florida's gaining a seat. You know, various states are gaining. Some states are losing. But what's happening is these California people, they're selling their homes for quite a bit of money. They don't need to spend that same amount of money if they're downsizing. Even if they're buying the same size home, it's going to be much cheaper in Phoenix, much cheaper in Dallas, some other markets across the country. And they're bringing this money into these markets. And in essence, they're edging out locals in these markets that are trying to buy homes because, you know, a house that might have sold for $400,000 today with this California money is selling for $600,000. And all of a sudden, you know, the family that's trying to buy a house in Phoenix or a house in Dallas, they're seeing that the prices are going through the roof because many of these people are in a position to come into a market and pay cash. They don't even need a mortgage. And so because it's a seller's market, the sellers are basically selling these homes with no contingencies, not even contingent on a mortgage closing in many cases. They're looking and they're getting all cash offers. And therefore, if you've got someone trying to buy a home and, you know, they have to get a mortgage, obviously, if a seller can sell their home for an all cash offer, you know, and close it in 30 days, they're going to take that all cash offer. So that local buyer is very often at a tremendous disadvantage because at the end of the day, if they need to get a mortgage, and normally you would buy a house contingent on being able to get a mortgage, qualifying for a mortgage, then, you know, the seller is not going to wait around. In fact, the sellers today, they're not even taking offers contingent on home inspections in a lot of cases. And even if you insist on a home inspection, which, by the way, you should do just so you know what you're buying, if you then go back to the seller and you ask the seller to fix something based on whatever came up in the home inspection, very often these sellers in many of these markets are saying, no, I'm selling the house as is. You either buy it the way it is, and by the way, I'm not dropping my price, so that isn't going to happen. And so you either buy it as is or forget it. I'll go on to the next buyer, because there's so many buyers in the marketplace. At this point, the country is down 4 million housing units. We need 4 million more housing units to deal with the demand that's in the marketplace. Now, obviously, this is happening because interest rates are so low, in the threes, 3%. In fact, I was just talking to someone in reference to getting a mortgage, and we were just joking, and this was a guy about 40 years old, and who's probably never experienced mortgage rates, you know, much less than 8%. And I reminded him, you know, I remember the days during the Jimmy Carter years, just when Ronald Reagan was elected president, and mortgage rates were 15%, if you could imagine that. They actually went as high as 18%. So the notion that we have mortgage rates at 3%, 3.2, 3.5, you can even get a mortgage for less than 3% in some cases, in some areas. And I mean, it's just unheard of. Well, those low rates are driving prices through the roof. People are trying to buy homes. They're struggling. It's tough. There's no inventory. I know in Reno, where I live, houses go on the market and they're sold within a week. They're gone. So, you know, it's just very interesting to watch this seller's market. But I know I did a blog posting on my Paragon Home Resources blog, and it was, you know, buyer beware, you know, buying a home, buyer beware, because you're buying at the very top of the market in many of these markets in terms of price. And if you don't have a 5 to 10 year horizon, you know, what goes up will come down eventually. If the feds raise interest rates, we could very well see home values decline. And people forget the early 90s. They forget what happened after 2007, 2008 in the financial collapse, where in some markets, properties went down 30, 40, even 50% in places like Phoenix and Las Vegas and California. I remember in the early 90s, you know, we had properties devaluate by 30, 40, 50%. When the market collapsed. And so I get very nervous when you buy property or you buy anything at the very high end. The stock market has gone through the roof thanks to the Trump tax cuts, but, you know, and the low interest rates. President Biden is talking about raising taxes and substantially raising taxes. Folks, if we raise taxes on this economy and the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, both the stock market will decline, guaranteed, and house prices will decline, guaranteed. So if you don't have a fairly long horizon and you're buying a home, if you think you're going to keep it a year or two, that's a very risky move in this market environment. So you have to be able to ride out the cycles so that ultimately, if we do end up having, you know, the market come down, you're not going to be selling during a downturn. Because if you have to sell during a downturn, now keep in mind, there are things you can't control. There are reasons why maybe you would have to sell during a downturn. Your job gets relocated. God forbid somebody in your family dies or gets very sick. You know, there could be legitimate reasons that were unexpected where you might have to sell. But doing it in a downturn could be awfully painful, because you could end up in a negative equity situation where the house is worth less than your mortgage. If you're only putting 10% down, or maybe even 20% down, and the house drops 30% because the market has fallen dramatically, you could be what's called upside down. So where you owe more in the mortgage than the house is worth, and that's not a good thing. So, you know, you got to be very careful. I'm telling people today, if you're buying homes in many of these markets, you got to have at least a 5-year horizon. 10 years would even be better, so that ultimately you can weather a storm if, in fact, we see a downturn in the market. Because what's happening right now is there's big money coming in, buying these homes, paying cash for them, driving up prices, creating bidding wars because there just isn't enough inventory. And this is
we'll be back with more after this quick break.
Now, back to CEO Business Mind, the radio show for entrepreneurs, small business owners, and professionals with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind with the second segment of our show today. You know, I'm kind of chuckling a little bit because the car manufacturers have all announced that within the next 15 years or so, they will only be making electric cars. Well, isn't that nice? They're only going to make electric cars. And I just want, and everybody's saying, oh, it's wonderful. It's going to be so good for the environment. And, you know, we're not going to have pollution and we're going to have this perfect carbon-free world because all of a sudden the gasoline or diesel-powered engines are all going to be gone and we're all going to have electric cars. Okay. And so I just wish that, you know, everybody would consider the implications of electric cars. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but it's going to cause major dislocation in our economy without a doubt. First of all, there are millions and millions and millions of jobs that tie to the oil and gas industries. And so, and they're good paying jobs. And many of them, by the way, are union jobs. And they're everything from, you know, the folks that do the drilling to the pipe fitters to you name it. There's all kinds of jobs, millions of them that tie to the oil and gas industry. And coal miners. Coal miners, by the way, make a lot of money. It's not unusual for a coal miner to make $100,000 a year. And believe me, in places like West Virginia, that's a lot of money for these people. So the real question, and this is the easy stuff, what's going to happen to those people? What's going to happen to those jobs? Those are jobs that can't be offshored. Those are not jobs that are going to China because those jobs, you know, are here. You know, you're drilling in Texas or you're drilling in Oklahoma, wherever it is you're drilling. You have the Marcellus shale that's in Ohio, Pennsylvania. You know, the whole Midwest is sitting on top of the Marcellus oil and gas shale fields, and that's created a boom in those locations. Well, obviously, if now we have electric cars, presumably, there still would be a need for natural gas to power, you know, generating plants. That's the other thing too. You know, right now in California, there are blackouts happening in California right now. And I would guess that there are only, I don't know, 10% of the cars in California are electric. The rest are all gas powered or diesel powered. And there are already blackouts in California because there's not enough power generation. So what's going to happen? Now, all of a sudden, everybody's got an electric car. Okay, so we know we've already destroyed, I don't know, 5 million, 10 million jobs, maybe more, that tie directly to the oil and gas industries. And you might think, well, okay, those people are going to make solar panels or they're going to make wind turbines. Really? Those industries are long gone. They're in China. We can't compete because we can't compete with the wages in China. So solar panels are mostly made in China. The wind turbines are made in China because their cost of labor is so much less than what it would be in the United States. So obviously the 5 to 10 million jobs that are lost in the oil and gas industry, they're not moving over to make those solar panels or those wind turbines. Those industries are already gone. And then the other thing I was thinking about, just in terms of implications, there's big implications here. There are 168,000 gas stations in the United States. And many of those gas stations, by the way, the newer ones often, are tied to convenience stores. And keep in mind, you know, when you see a Shell gas station or you see a Chevron gas station, that could very well be an independent business owner. That's not necessarily Shell or Chevron. Now, they may sell Shell gasoline or Chevron gasoline, that's the product they're selling. But that gas station that's on a street corner, presumably with a convenience store in back of it, that's sometimes owned by an independent business owner. Well, now, all of a sudden, we have electric cars, right? Well, at least in most cities where people live in a house, or even if they live in an apartment building that comes with some kind of parking, there's going to be a place to plug in right where you live. Presumably, if you live in a house, you got a garage. You're just going to plug right in every night when you come home. You're going to plug in. So the notion that you're somehow going to convert 168,000 gas stations into electric plug-in stations, there isn't going to be the need because most people are going to plug in right where they live. Now, you will have a situation where, let's say you're driving from Southern California to Phoenix, and it's about an eight-hour drive depending on where you're driving from, right? So along the highway, presumably, there may have to be some plug-in stations because right now, you know, most of these electric cars, they're getting about 300 miles to a charge, some of them 400 miles to a charge. You probably would have to plug in somewhere halfway, you know, between Phoenix and Southern California, or if you were driving to Las Vegas, or, you know, depending on where you're driving to and from. So there may be some need for some power stations along major highways. But for the most part, those gas stations that are on street corners, here's the problem, okay? You know, the gas stations that are at intersections of major boulevards in many major cities, the lot itself isn't really big enough to do very much with it. Now, it's conceivable that the convenience store may remain, but the whole basis of the convenience store was the notion that you were stopping for gas. Those lots are not big enough to turn into plug-in stations. And besides, when you plug in, you know, you usually have to leave your car in a spot for 30 to 60 minutes, maybe longer, to get the charge to your battery. And so those lots wouldn't be big enough necessarily to have plug-in stations in them. Maybe the convenience stores would remain, but you really can't do much more with those lots because there isn't sufficient parking, you know, to do any kind of a bigger use, so to speak, you know, for those particular properties. And by the way, because the gas station is tied to the convenience store, that is the value of the business for that business owner. So the notion that all of a sudden the manufacturers have announced that 10 or 15 years from now, they're only going to be making electric cars. So who's going to buy that business from the business owner? He or she may have his whole life tied into that investment. And now it has no value. So who's going to buy? And in many cases, that business owner may not own the lot that the gas station is on. That could be leased land. So they may not own the real estate. They may only own the structure on the real estate and the in essence, the gas pumps and all of that that would go away. So all of a sudden, you've got these business owners, even today, that probably can't sell those businesses because why would anybody buy them? The value of the lot is the real estate, and there could be some value in the property itself, but the business, which is generally predicated on sales, you know, how much business is the business owner doing on that particular property in gas sales or in convenience store sales? You know, is it $500,000 a year? Is it $1 million a year? I don't even know, you know, what a gas station generates in a given year. Maybe it's more than that. I don't know. But the point is, all of a sudden, the notion that there are no gasoline-powered cars anymore, the guy owns a business that he can't sell. He can't sell that business, okay? And that corner lot that now could be hemmed in on three or four sides by other buildings or other type of uses, all of a sudden, that intersection that was valuable as a gas station may not be so valuable anymore because it's too small to put anything major on it, maybe. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting, but this is like peeling an onion. Oh, here's the other little problem. Those batteries that are going in the electric cars, the minerals necessary, China controls those. We don't have enough of those minerals. We would have to buy them from China because they have a huge lock on the market for lithium and the other minerals that have to go into those batteries. And it's difficult because, you know, we have environmentalists that don't allow mining in our country. So there are some places, in fact, in Nevada, not too far from where we live in northern Nevada, there are some rich lithium fields that could be mined. But a lot of times the environmentalists prevent mining from happening in the United States. So now all of a sudden, years ago, we were dependent on the Middle East for oil and gas. Now we're energy independent in the United States for the first time in forever. And now if we switch to electric cars, we're now going to be dependent on other countries, including most importantly China, for the minerals that are necessary for those batteries. So as it relates to these electric cars, folks, it's like peeling an onion. We really have to think through all of the implications in terms of what it's going to mean if we go to electric cars.
Whether you're thinking of starting a business or just moving up the corporate ladder, this is the place for practical advice. CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind for the second half of our show. If you need to get to me, it's really easy. Just Google CEOBusinessMind.com. Look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you can take a look at my blog postings. Very instructional. Going back years, you can see some of the businesses that we're in. You can even check out some of the job openings that we might have in the United States and sometimes even outside in better times. If you're interested in my political rantings, and they are rantings, just go to nationalfreedomforum.com. Again, look for the box that says subscribe. Type in your email information. Follow the confirmation instructions. And if you do that, you'll get my political blog post every day. If you want to know more about Paragon Home Resources, one of the businesses that we're in, just go to paragonhomeresources.com. Look for the click that says blog. Click on it. Type in your email information in the box, follow the confirmation instructions, and you'll get my home-related blog postings every day. For this third segment of our show, I want to talk about President Biden's estate tax changes and how bad it would be for small businesses. You know, right now, and this happened primarily because, you know, people think if somebody owns a farm and they produce, you know, wheat or whatever it is they grow, that there's the income from selling the wheat and everything else. Well, that's all hunky-dory. But if you own a farm or you own a business, and that business could be providing you a nice living, but if you die, presumably, and you want to leave that farm to your heirs, whether it's your wife, whether it's your kids, whoever it might be, your husband, you know, right now they raise the sort of gift possibility where you could leave $11 million. This happened in the Trump tax cuts. You could leave up to $11 million tax-free and this and that. Now, that sounds like a huge amount of money, and it is a huge amount of money. But if you own a farm, your land could be valued at more than $11 million. Well, at last count, and President Biden is talking about raising all kinds of taxes, he wants to take that down to $3.5 million. And the estate tax after the limit that you're allowed to give tax-free, I think at the moment is 47%. So now you own that farm or you own that business, and it's valued at more than $3.5 million. And it could be, the land alone could be valued at more than that. And now your family is going to get whacked, presumably with a huge estate tax, which could be 40 or 50% of whatever the value is that they're inheriting. And the problem is, if you own land and now, and the land is owned, you know, free and clear, you either have to take out a mortgage on that land. Some way you got to get this money to pay the IRS, because at the end of the day, the IRS wants a piece of the action. And to the extent that Biden is successful in lowering the amount that can be given tax-free for small businesses or for farms in terms of what's inherited by the family, there's another rule in the code that says, let's say you die and you leave, your wife inherits everything, okay? Well, at that point, it's called a stepped-up basis where, let's say, when you started the business, it was worth zero. And you grew it to a $5 million business. Well, generally, the way it works right now, if your family takes over that business, the basis steps up to the $5 million. So let's say now they operate it for, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, all right? Because it stepped up to $5 million, it doesn't go all the way back to zero in terms of when you started the business with nothing. The basis goes to $5 million. Now the gain is against $5 million to whatever you sell it for. Let's say $10 million. Pick a number. It doesn't really matter. The point is it doesn't go all the way back down to zero. What President Biden wants to do is get rid of the rule that allows for the stepped up basis for your heirs, which means you would owe your, when you go to sell that business, presumably 5 years from now or whenever, you would owe a boatload of capital gains tax. And therefore, what Biden wants to do is if it's more than $1 million, then he wants you paying the regular income tax rates, which he wants to raise to 39-point-something percent, plus the Obamacare. Point is, it gets it to 43% federal if it's on a capital gain, plus whatever you'd have to pay in the state that you live in. In California, if this were to happen, you would see a combined federal and tax rate of 57%. So in essence, in reference to the gain on a capital, any kind of capital gain that you would be paying, the government would end up getting more than what you get when you go to sell that property or sell that business or sell whatever it is that would have a capital gain attached to it. So between the inheritance tax that Biden is trying to do and changes to the estate tax and then changes to the capital gains tax that he's trying to push in, families would owe God knows how much, huge amounts of money that they would have to come up with in order to pay off the IRS. And by the way, if you don't pay off the IRS, the interest on the money that's owed to the IRS right now is about 9%. And so while you can put a payment plan in place with the IRS over years, but the interest rate is really high compared to what the interest rates are now, let's say for a mortgage at 3%. At 9% over a 10-year period, let's say you paid it, I think you're allowed 7 years. I forget what the rule is with the IRS. But let's say you paid it off over 7 years, you would owe hundreds of thousands of dollars more in interest on the money perhaps that you owe the IRS. So what Biden is trying to do is really, really, really bad for small businesses and for families in particular that often own small businesses that have put their whole life into a family. And now comes Biden's tax raises, increases that would literally take, you know, huge amounts of money away from families. And a lot of these are family farms. You know, earlier we talked about the guy who owns a gas station on the street corner. Well, that's a business, folks. I don't know who we could sell it to these days, given the trends that are coming. Those businesses have been devalued dramatically by virtue of getting rid of gasoline because that's the product that the guy sells. But even so, let's say the commercial real estate is worth money because he's owned it for years. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to get hit with this incredible capital gains tax. If he dies, his family's going to get hit with this incredible estate tax. And so there is a limit here, folks. You know, we need government. We need government for certain things. We need government for national defense. You know, if you ever get a chance to watch C-SPAN and you watch hearings, Senate hearings, congressional hearings, House hearings, and you see the deep state in action, and you see these politicians, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, it doesn't matter. And they talk in terms of billions of dollars for everything conceivable. And you wonder, where is all of this money coming from? Well, of course, they're borrowing it. I mean, our debt is $20 trillion, going to be more than $20 trillion, which will never pay off. It's going to cause the bankruptcy of the United States. But it's almost like it's limitless. You know, I listen to these hearings, and it's $10 billion for this and $50 billion for that and $100 billion for something else. Do you know, folks, and believe me, I support the military, our military is in 150 countries and that they're involved one way or another in 93 wars around the world. Did you know there were 93 wars going on around the world? I didn't know that. I just Googled it. Some of them you don't hear much about, but they could be civil wars in some of these small little countries in Africa and other places. But our military is in 150 countries around the world. We're still defending Europe, and American taxpayers are defending Europe and paying for everything. And for the most part, Germany, the largest economy in Europe, and I think in the top five in the world, does not pay their fair share to defend their own country. And yet the American taxpayer is on the hook so the Germans can have free health care. And ultimately, you know, we pay for their national defense. The EU has a huge economy. Britain and France both have nuclear weapons. And so we're spending American taxpayer dollars through these tax increases, and taxes, frankly, are already high enough, through these tax increases that President Biden wants to charge. It's our taxpayer money paying to defend Europe, and these are rich countries today. Are we completely crazy? I think so. We'll take a quick time out and be back for more CEO Business Mind.
Harnessing the entrepreneurial spirit of America. This is CEO Business Mind with Joe Morabito.
And this is Joe Morabito with CEO Business Mind for the fourth and final segment of our show today. And I want to talk about the impact of shutting down the economy related to COVID. I have been in business for more than 40 years, and I've managed through, I don't even know how many recessions, at least three, maybe more. I've managed through, you know, real estate collapses, stock market collapses, the lowest and highest interest rates in American history. I was in New York for 9/11. That's a whole nother story. I could do a whole show on that. I was in New York for 9/11. We managed through the dot-com bust. I mean, when I think through in my 40 years in business, you know, all of the economic turmoil and chaos that I've seen and presumably managed through, because I've been in business for more than 40 years and had to get through it all, I've never seen anything like we experienced with COVID, where literally government, state and federal, literally shut down the economy, where in essence, you couldn't go anywhere, you couldn't do anything, you couldn't go to stores, you couldn't do anything. And it really hit home the other day. I was at the dry cleaner where we live, and you know, I'm always the Gabby type asking questions. So I said to the dry cleaner, "How's business?" And he said to me, "What business?" And he said, "You do realize that everything has been shut down for a year. And who needed dry cleaning when they were working from home in their sweats? Who needed dry cleaning when there were no parties? Who needed dry cleaning when nobody could go out to dinner? Who needed clean clothes that required dry cleaning other than what you could throw in your own washer at home?" And, you know, it really hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, I was obviously aware of the 300,000 or 400,000 restaurants that have closed for good because, you know, they just couldn't survive. It didn't matter if they were going to get PPP money or whatever. You had to be open, by the way, to get PPP money. And so, you know, to the extent that these restaurants could survive when they were not allowed to open, now many of them figured out takeout and this and that may have worked for part of their business. But the notion that, you know, you had more than 300,000 restaurants go out, might have been 400,000, go out of business for good. You had more than 25,000 retail stores close for good. The impact on the commercial real estate market, now that people have figured out how to work from home, my employees don't want to work from an office anymore. I gave them the choice in Dallas, you know, do you want to work from the office? Because, you know, we were closed, of course, because they were working from home. And, you know, how fortuitous that we had bought technology about 3 years ago that really we could work from the moon, assuming there was oxygen on the moon. We could work from anywhere. We don't need to work from an office anymore. And I asked my employees, "Would you prefer to work from home?" And every single one of them said yes. And I said, "Well, then why do I need to rent an office? I don't need this space. This is crazy." And we got rid of the office space that we had in Texas. We're probably getting rid of the little office space we have in California. I'm going to have everybody work from home. But I think what's interesting, you know, you really have to think through the impact of shutting down the economy and what it's done to our country. The notion that schools have been closed, and by the way, that's infuriating when the CDC comes out a month or two after the election and says, really, there was no problem with schools. Schools could have been open. Think of the implications of schools being closed on the two-parent families, which is 65% of working America are two-parent, you know, families with children. And now all of a sudden the schools are closed. And, you know, the whole notion of, well, I could go to work because my kids were at school and they were having to homeschool their children. And particularly for poor minority kids, 50% of them did not attend the online learning. So many of these children have lost a whole year of instruction over all of this. And so, you know, the depression that it's caused, the increased suicides that it's caused. And I just wonder, you know, if it was all worth it. Any death is tragic, folks. More than 500,000 people have died from COVID. Of those, the vast majority were 70 years or older. 65,000 of those people, of the 500,000 plus that died, were living in nursing homes. And so obviously, if you're in a nursing home, you have serious health issues or you wouldn't be in a nursing home. Many of those people living in nursing homes were on their last legs. I won't say anyway, because every death is tragic, no matter what the circumstances. But the reality is most of the people who died of COVID died because they had other ailments and illnesses, comorbidities, I think they're called. And so the real question is, you know, was it worth it? We had a lot of friends who were in their 70s who got COVID. Most of them had mild symptoms. They were over it in 3 or 4 days. A few of them had flu-like symptoms. Very few. I think we had one or two that we know of that were acquaintances that died of COVID. And again, every death is tragic. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But we destroyed this economy, this global economy, for this plague that came from China. We destroyed this economy for an entire year. I know our business was down 50%. And you know, I can only gauge it by 9/11. When 9/11 hit, our business fell by 35%. That was the most drastic drop that we had ever seen from any downturn that I had managed through in my 30 or 40 years in business. This time around, our business dropped by 50%. And of course, it resulted in layoffs. What are you going to do? If you don't have work for people, you have to lay them off. You have to cut salaries. You have to do whatever is necessary to survive. And believe me, the PPP money, it helped. It certainly helped. Don't misunderstand me. But it didn't prevent layoffs ultimately because, you know, if you don't have business, you can't pay people to do nothing. We were fortunate. We were able to continue in business at least through the 50% of the volume that we were dealing with. But so many businesses were destroyed. And the dry cleaner really hit home for me when he said to me, "What business?" When I said, "How is business?" And he said, "What business?" Now, they got PPP money that got them through it. But obviously, his volume fell dramatically because unless people are out and about, then who needs clothes to be dry cleaned? If you're working at home in your sweats, and obviously you can throw those sweats in the washer and dryer, then you're not going to a dry cleaner. And he was right. Frankly, I haven't done much dry cleaning in the last year. Most of what I've worn, jeans or whatever, you throw in the washer. You know, to the extent that I needed things dry cleaned, it's been pretty minimal. And I'm sure my dry cleaning bill that might have been, God, $1,000 a year, I don't know, $100 a month, whatever it might have been, I guarantee you I didn't spend that money in the last year. I know I didn't because I didn't go to the dry cleaner very often. So it really hit home for me in the most basic way when I asked my local dry cleaner, "How's business?" And he said, "What business?" Well, you can carry that through on an industry by industry basis. Look at the cruise ship industry that's literally been shut down. Now keep in mind, these boats, these ships, they're billions and billions of dollars sitting there empty. And, you know, the most likely the ships are financed. I'm sure it's no different than building anything else. They're financed. And there would have been, you know, debt that had to be paid. And I'm assuming maybe they got a debt moratorium for a while since the ships weren't running. But think of the cruise ship industry and all the trips that have been canceled. Europe is finally saying they're going to allow Americans to come back to Europe if they can prove that they've been vaccinated. So look at the European travel that, you know, has been gone for more than a year. I know we had a trip scheduled that was going to happen in the spring of 2020 that we had to cancel to Europe because obviously it didn't happen. The trip was canceled. It took about 6 months to get our money back when push came to shove. But think of the business. Think of the trickle down. and all of the different companies, all of the different organizations that were impacted by being shut down for more than a year. The good news is many states are opening up. Many states are now open for business. I'm tired of wearing a mask, folks, and I've been vaccinated, and unless somebody absolutely requires me to wear a mask, I'm not wearing a mask anymore. I'm ready to burn my mask, you know? So part of it, I think, the CDC keeps putting out revisions to the rules. I mean, they were saying if you're outside, you're supposed to wear a mask. Come on, folks. This is ridiculous. They want kids in day camps, outside, wearing masks, doing these activities. That's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. And so I think it's just getting to the point where it really doesn't matter what the Center for Disease Control says. People have had it. They're ignoring the rules. We have to get back to work. The kids have to get back to school. You know, more and more people are being vaccinated. We're starting to reach the point where we get what's called herd immunity, where there are enough people vaccinated that it's certainly safe to be out and about. And yes, no doubt, there are going to be some people that still get sick. Well, folks, people get the flu every year. People die of all sorts of things every year. And again, I'm not trying to be cruel because every death is tragic. But if we get to the point where we can't do anything, then heck, the flu is contagious. Are we going to wear masks forever? Let's hope not. Well, we're out of time for this week, folks, but I hope you'll join me again next week for more CEO Business Mind.